Welcome back. WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I am delighted to be here. We had a little bit more space. I'd make room for the nachos. We have guacamole, and we're going to have crab cakes. It is the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. It is all presented by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. We're letting ourselves play. I got Betty Boop tickets here. I don't know if Jay Miller's going to take one, but I'm going to offer her one, the pink one, the blue one. Don Moeller is here. You know, when I dreamed this thing up 4 years ago, I said, one day I'll be having margaritas, eating nachos with Jane Miller, talking about real journalism right here on Frederick Road. We're at El Guapo. We're eating well today, and we're going to have a heck of a conversation because you're a little, like, last night was a long night for you. Wow, winning a big award, Don Moeller.
The award winning. Shame. Not her first award either. Not her first rodeo. You know, right. The Maryland, you know, Daily Record, Most Powerful People, and Baltimore Magazine, and everything you can imagine. Jane, welcome back.
Thank you all. Didn't we do this the last time by Zoom?
We did. Because we all had masks on. Yeah, we were right. In the middle of the play.
Right. I'm trying to think of when it was, and I was like, I think we did this via Zoom. So
before you had right. COVID. And we'll,
yes, that
we'll,
is correct.
We'll get
that
in,
is correct.
We will right. get into correct. To COVID. Jane, let's start with, I mean, all your buddies have been posting today, Deborah Wiener, Scott Wyckoff. I mean, everybody's posting about the great job you did last night and winning this award, and you hooked up with your old pal from down there, passing through Omar Jimenez,
yes.
now national
Omar is a
superstar.
Star. He right, is a star.
Right, right. You know, he's one of those young guys that you knew was going to be a star the first time he drifted out to the county courthouse. You know, you watched him operate, and I can remember talking with my staff. I'm saying, I don't think we're going to be talking to Omar very long around here.
He is an absolute star and the nicest guy, you know.
Yeah, really no a nice guy. If I remember, Notre Dame University.
Northwestern.
I was thinking, I knew it was somewhere. Okay, I was thinking it was Notre Dame.
He also, you know, is a rap artist. Very accomplished. In fact, he has a new thing coming out soon.
Wow.
I'm serious. He's really just a
first
very
Oprah in this
individual.
Town, and now him, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, tell us.
I did say during my remarks last night that the network executives in the room better pay attention because somebody's going to snatch him up.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a great job with CNN, obviously, but he's really headed for
not even 30 yet.
So I wake up this morning, and you're literally the first thing on my timeline. I guess I've said your name enough this week that you're coming on the show or whatnot. Right. And it literally popped up, Dan Jarrus's thing and Twitter. You were on all of right. the social media, including, I follow you, and you said there was a speech and this and that. And you walked in, and I said, we're not doing that until we open the mic. So we're dying to know
what,
like all
what is
about,
this about
the award, right?
Okay.
Yeah, let's talk about the award because it's near to my heart. The First Amendment.
The organization is the. It used to be RTNDA, right? Okay. Radio Television News. Now it's called Radio Television Digital News Association. So RTDFA is the foundation. Okay. Whatever. But it's a very large organization of radio and television and now digital operators, companies, et cetera, networks and local TV, you know, and all the local TV operators. So they present every year a small series of awards for called the First Amendment Awards, and then they occasionally do a Lifetime Achievement Award. So that's where I came in. Got their Lifetime Achievement Award because I've been doing this a long time.
I was going to say, there's something,
doing this
there's
long
a bittersweet part.
Yeah,
to
it is. You know, it is.
Award,
and I
right?
thought about that, about this Lifetime thing, because it really causes you to think, wow. You know,
Jane, I'm 53,
really
and I don't know you don't want to hear this, and this is my 31st year of doing this.
Wow.
I don't remember television without you. You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking,
I don't
like,
remember television without
yeah,
me.
I mean, like, I'm thinking, and I would say the same thing about Turk and Bass, and I guess,
yeah, no, I know.
You know,
there's
like,
a lot of
but I'm thinking back to,
like
we've already, before we went on the air, we're dishing about BAL and baseball
right.
and, like, the radio side, and we said Dave Durian. You know, we said Ron. I mean, you know, we're
absolutely.
Talking about people we've lost along the way
yes.
that we've all,
yes.
we all remember well.
Correct.
You're like, it's still, and I'm not patronizing you.
No.
You know, that's his job. You feel like you're still in your prime to me. I mean, it doesn't,
yeah.
like if I hear yeah. two years from now, you're retiring or whatever, say, what's up with that? Because,
right.
and I think your speech a little bit maybe spoke to this, that I don't know who's filling the shoes of what you do here. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, I think you've...
That's a, that's what I'm kind of working on that too. Right.
Right. But there's a problem in our industry, financially, spiritually, like what this is going to be for news and how government will be held accountable and how truth will be told, right?
Well, in fact, that was kind of parts of my speech last night. The theme of the speech was the...
I got to get you set up here, man. I got to get you organized. All right. These TV people, you put them on a podcast.
Wait, I got it there. Now it's better. Okay.
All right. You good?
So, yeah. Right, so really, kind of the point I wanted to make was, because I've been at this for so long, I mean, look, journalism is under pressure everywhere. The print journalism in particular, newspapers, et cetera, are under a lot of pressure. And, you know, we're about to have this new experiment in Baltimore. I shouldn't call it an experiment, but this new outlet in Baltimore called the Baltimore Banner, which is going to be a digital-only online subscription service, I believe.
Yes, no doubt. I was with that whole, while you were down there winning an award, out with a bunch of them last evening.
Yes, right. So they're going to ask people to pay for their online product, and they've been hiring a bunch of people, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, what are they going to end up being? Don't know yet. It's going to be interesting to see. But, you know, across the industry, there's definitely pressure. Part of it has been growing for a number of years just because of additional competition and additional outlets, you know, and an additional product. I mean, if you look at, you know, the streaming services, my God, I mean, they're everywhere. And there's a lot of content being produced for Netflix and Apple TV and Hulu and you name them. And then if you watch television during the day, or not even TV, but if you watch streaming during the day, either on the computer or on TV, you will see that NBC is streaming all day long, news, CBS news all day long.
So I found this out. I moved to the suburbs 6 weeks ago, and I have a picture of me holding my form getting rid of Xfinity.
Yeah, okay, you know, well, that's right.
I took three big boxes down to Canton.
Yep, right,
turned them in.
Right.
And I moved to the county, and we didn't have our TVs hooked up. My wife's a Verizon. I mean, I have high speed cable and all that. And we're 6 weeks in. My wife went away for 2 weeks. She came home, and I said, look, if we get cable TV, it's going to be because you need it, not because I want it in any way. I think, and he and I are going to fight about baseball and Masson and ESPN and all of that. My wife watches your channel, swear to God, all day.
Good to
and
hear.
She has taken the iPad that she has now to her desk with the cat and the deer and all we have. And I come in, when I left her today, she was watching what you're talking about.
Yeah.
The thing she loves. Today's show, you guys.
And that's on all day. And and this is not cable like CNN cable, MSNBC cable, et cetera. They all stream. So this is a changing the landscape. But at the end of the day, local news is still, you know, really dependent on healthy, strong local organizations. Now, you're probably owned by a national corporation, but to have really strong local TV stations, local publications, et cetera. And that was really my message, is so how do you counter the continual onslaught of misinformation, discrediting that goes on, the trolling on social media that goes on, you know, that is just, it's a daily onslaught. How do you counter it? You counter it with strength. And strength means you have really strong news organizations with good, strong reporters, good, strong content, good, strong infrastructure. I think the infrastructure is the most important thing in a news organization. And what I mean by that is, you know, you see people on the air in our business, but there are a whole lot of people you don't see on the air. Producers and writers and photographers and editors.
We have them here at Baltimore Positive, too. They're they're over there.
Right. But at any rate, that's really important to being able to sustain, you know, good, solid journalism every day. Look, what is this, March 10th? Okay, March 9th, 2020 was the last time I was in our building on TV Hill full time. That's when we got kicked out because of the pandemic. Now we're back in some, you know, pretty much normally form now, although there's still a lot of mobile work going on, et cetera, remote work.
But we all learned to work differently.
We all learned to work differently, but we never missed a beat. We had people suddenly that weren't in the building.
Right.
And yet we continued every day, and now we're covering you know, the story of a lifetime, which is an enormous public health crisis, and that brought into play all kinds of other crises of leadership and governance, and, you know,
including misinformation.
And misinformation, big time. And so that's because we are a strong organization. We have, you know, we were already equipped, you know, reporters in the field, photographers all had laptops. They all work with laptops. So, you know, we all already work with, you know, these portable devices, you know, we call them backpacks, but they're TVU units. I mean, they're units that get you on the air without the live truck. We're already equipped to do all of that. So when we had this enormous disruption to not our normal way of doing business, we still did business, and we did it every day. And that's because we have a strong organization, and we have people who are experienced. That's the other thing. I mean, you can't operate like that if you don't have folks that have been through, you know, a lot of things, and learn how to deal with all the curves that get thrown your way. And that's been, you know, throughout my lifetime of working in journalism. I mean, I've been through a million and a half situations where you really have to, you know, kind of roll with the punches. I always say that one of my favorite scenes is in the Apollo 13 movie. Is it Apollo 13 or 11? Which is the one that got stuck up there? 13.
13.
Okay, they had the carbon dioxide
work
problem.
Work the problem, man. Work
right,
the problem.
Okay, so when there's a scene in the movie, so they're having all this trouble up there in the spaceship, and the engineers come into the room in Houston, and they have a box, cardboard box, and they dump on the box, here's what they have to work with, which was a bunch of different stuff, parts, right? And that's called using existing resources. So you're not in a situation up there where you can, like, suddenly order a part that they don't have.
Right.
And I say that about really good news organizations are able to do that. They're able to, you know, to handle the things that go wrong. What happens when the live shot dies? What happens when you lose your signal? You know, what happens when someone cuts your cable, which happened to us a couple of times. They cut your microwave cable. Now you can't be on the air. And how do you adjust to it immediately and keep the product rolling? And that's all because you build strong organizations. So that was really my message last night. And my second part of that message was, so, yeah, how do you
Does
do that?
Does that mean don't cut your staff when you say that?
That's right.
That's really what you're saying.
Yeah,
you're saying don't get rid of my editors. Don't get smaller.
Get stronger.
Okay.
That's right. So that also means hiring people that may not look like you, that may be more reflective of a community you're not familiar with, that may not think like you, that don't come from your life experience, to really diversify your organization so you are much more in contact with different parts of the community. And it means mentoring people. It means promoting them. It means supporting them. And obviously it means paying them. I mean, that was really my message, is that the only way you can survive in what we're going through now, and this misinformation thing is serious. It's
well,
serious.
He and I talk about it all the time. Like the nature of education in our country, what he set out to do when the day he met me.
Right.
He was my high school guidance counselor in 1982, was hope that I could make good decisions and hope that I knew right from wrong. And I say to him all the time, I don't even know what it's like, because when I was 15 years old, I was dropped down into the News American, where I was then dragged into the Evening Sun,
right,
where my parents signed a permission slip so I could join the Newspaper Guild at 17, that I never not had a notebook in front of a hockey coach who might have been lying to me and, you know, asked that question, are you lying to me? What's the truth? Who, what, where, why, when? And disseminating, when I came back and put my name at the top of it and my dad was going to read it the next day, whether it was true.
Right.
Right, like, and all of my life I've been able to discern that. And then I think of other people's life experience that wasn't like mine.
Right.
And wondering, how do you believe that and why do you believe that? And where did you get that?
Yeah, I know. Where does that come from?
And I'm literally, what used to be the star in the tabloids at the front of the newspaper,
right,
at the front of the supermarket, Wise Markets, whatever, that has become truth
the
for
norm.
A third of our country, right? Like, literally.
Yes. It is terrifying is right. I think Don is correct. It's terrifying.
Yeah, because I don't know, Jane, and I think those of us who value the truth, it degenerates into this name calling
yep.
of tribalism, where, well, you're just saying that because, mm-hmm. you know, so somebody says to you, well,
fake news was right. that was just a retort like a
fake
like a
news.
Schoolyard right. fake news. Well, right. that, no, I don't know how to
there are
that.
Facts. there are facts. And we'll, as I said, we'll get to your COVID situation and what you went through. It had to be very frustrating for someone who was going and continues right. to deal with COVID right. to watch the misinformation. But right now, if we look at the situation in Ukraine, it defies my imagination that as a nation, the Russian people, and I was watching it again this morning, are being told there is no war.
And they're being told other things
and
as
being
well.
Told other
right.
things.
Correct.
That the Ukrainians are blowing up their own nuclear
right.
plant.
Correct.
That the Ukrainians are thinking about using chemical weapons. I mean, this massive,
yep.
And what Nestor talks about all of the time are the Russian bots that have been so active in our
And it's so
political.
Obvious
for,
to anyone who's a thinking person.
A while.
For a
this
while.
This isn't
okay.
new.
A decade.
That's
sure.
correct. For a while. That is correct. I mean, I think it's just it's going to be very interesting to kind of look back with history looks back on this. You know, I'm going to use this about some of the disruption that is happened in this country, and you wonder like who's really behind that. And I'll give you an example. There was an indictment by the Department of Justice. This was during the Trump administration, and when Rod Rosenstein was still Deputy Attorney General, I know that they brought like a 13-15 member conspiracy case against. I think it was called the Russian Internet Agency. And this was the nature of the allegations, is that they were using all kinds of means in a conspiracy to use misinformation and disruption, et cetera, in the United States.
Well, in the old days, they would just try to steal your money, right? Give me 99,
right.
so give me your credit card or whatever.
Right.
This
right.
is a whole different thing. This
right.
is
right.
mine,
and
right?
So one of the examples was that there was a protest after the 2016 election against Trump. And it was organized, I think, in New York City. This is one of the allegations in the case. And it was a women's march, something like that. But it brought a lot of people. And the allegation in the criminal case is that it was this Russian entity that was actually behind it. Now, that's called disruption. That's what I mean, that this isn't new. About the effort of, you know, the Russians to disrupt and, you know, cause disbelief. In
well, the
some
internet
of the
has
well,
opened anyway. This up, and
well, yeah, and it's open to it because it's not regulated, and it's you know it's really open to it. Social media is especially open to it.
Oh my God! And I tell Nestor, Jane, all the time, and people who know me know that I'm fixated on this what I'll call. The 32 or 33%.
Correct.
Because they've always been there.
Correct.
You know, they were the example I use ad nauseum on this show is at the end of the McCarthy hearings.
Yes.
When he had been discredited and run out of town, 32 to 33% mm-hmm. of the American people still believe Joe McCarthy
right.
was correct.
Right.
They've always
That's
been
right.
there.
Right.
We had a large percentage in the 60s
correct.
With the John Birch Society.
Right.
The only thing different now is the ability to mobilize
organize.
That and organize that. And we just had Mark Steiner on, and I thought Mark made an excellent point, and you know Mark well. Mark said that what they've done and what the rest of us have fallen asleep on the job is they now recognize what the organizers of the civil rights movements and others did in the 60s and 70s. You had to organize at the local
yes,
level.
Yes, correct.
You had to mobilize. And this 30%, these people that are just truly playing with a different deck of cards than the rest
right.
of us, have now learned that, and thus we create things that don't exist, like critical
right.
race. And I saw a poll. And you can react to this. I saw a poll this morning where one of the poll questions, and this is how crazy we've become, was do you as the American public believe that we ought to eliminate critical race theory from public
right.
schools in the United States? Well, the poll was flawed
right.
from
right.
the get-go
right.
because
correct.
It doesn't exist
right. Right.
as a philosophy.
That's correct.
But of course, 40-some percent of the people, a
right.
plurality, said, yes, of course we should.
Right.
So it's self-fulfilling,
right.
Jane.
I know. And I don't mean, where do we go? That's the
right.
thing, is where does this go? Where does this go?
Jay Miller's our guest. We're at El Guapo. I've got some Betty Boop tickets here. Stop by next week on Friday as well. We'll be at Costas Inn doing the Crab Cake Tour there. Got some great guests. There's a rumor Rob Roblin's coming by. I've never had Rob on the show. I've only had you on the show via Zoom. So this is like super fun being with a real journalist. You know, we talk about free speech and we talk about what people can say and accountability and where all that is. The one thing that hasn't wavered through all of this time is this city, Pulitzer Prize winning. We've had mayors taken down. Mm-hmm. We have a situation right now with the state's attorney. That these things require Jane Miller or someone like Jane Miller or someone like what the Baltimore Sun represented.
Right.
And you mentioned in America what happened. Nixon gets taken down by reporters, not taken down by judges or cops.
But
or
you know
cops
my theory,
cops,
and I want Jane to weigh in. You know my theory on that. Had the current social media gestalt existed in 1972 and had Fox News.
Can you imagine if Nixon was on the phone shaking down the Georgia...
Well, there's a lot of those scenarios that you think, what if?
What if, right? I mean, I think Richard Nixon would have persisted. I think if
well, then
if,
you think this country's fundamentally changed
I think
in that
Tucker
way
Carlson,
because news can't bring that down. Even reporting news, even grabbing them by the, you know, video, that none of that reached those people politically.
Well, look,
in 2020.
Wait, I mean, look at the January 6th incident, insurrection, that how many people don't believe that was a bad thing.
Well, no. They cheered.
And
Trump
just
went to a rally, Jane.
People in powerful positions don't believe that was a bad thing.
And Andy Harris doesn't believe it was a bad thing. Donald Trump went to a rally recently and said if he's elected president again, he'll be treating them fairly. Pardoning them. So it is a really strange situation. As you said, it's a challenge for all of you in this business. Taking a look at this and going in the Wayback Machine, one of the things I wanted to ask you was you start back in 1976 and at Harrisburg, PA.
Yes.
And one of the things I was struck by, and I thought, damn, that's probably true. And it said, Jane was one of a few women to be breaking through at that time in an industry that had been dominated by men.
You know who I had this conversation with last night? Andrea Mitchell.
Okay.
From NBC. Okay, so Andrea...
She's pretty cool.
She was at KYW in Philadelphia when I was in Harrisburg.
I watched her for years because my wife was from South
NBC.
Jersey.
Yep, there you go. So, we had this conversation about how different women weren't allowed in the press room in the Harrisburg State Cop, in the state capitol in Pennsylvania, in Harrisburg, in the 60s. And so, yes, when I said, you know, that's exactly right. The newsrooms at that time, I mean, this was not, that was 30 years after really television came on the air.
Right.
1970s.
Correct.
Okay. And, I mean, newsrooms were dominated by men. And
that was the trust of the viewer?
Did you know it,
Jane? It was the Walter Cronkite image, too. I mean, that was, you know, he was like...
Yeah, Huntley, Brinkley, Cronkite.
Absolutely. Tom Brokaw then later, you know, it was, it was just, that was the way it was. Remember, Barbara Walters went on the air in the 70s, late 70s, anchoring for a short time, the ABC Evening News. But it was definitely, I was the first woman in the newsroom where I went to work in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, with a full-time news job.
Did you know, I always think that when we're in the midst of something, we may not know what we're in the midst of. We have to, you know. So when you show up and you look around, you go, ain't many of us.
Wait, I have a better story.
Okay.
So I went to Penn State. And Penn State, they still do it. They have career days. And all these companies come and they set up shop in the Student Union Building or whatever, and it's a recruiting fair, big time.
Stickies involved and all that.
So I was a journalism major, but, you know, the advisors said, you should go interview some of these, it's good experience to interview some of these companies. So I end up interviewing with what was then Armstrong Carpet. And they were headquartered in Lancaster, Pennsylvania at the time. I don't know who owns them now, but at any rate. So I end up getting invited to their headquarters for like a second interview. And it was, I really wasn't going to take this job, but I just kind of wanted...
What were you going to do for Armstrong?
Well, it was a marketing job or something like that.
Okay. There you go.
And I'll never forget
it. You were going to be spilling Cokes on carpet
and show
us how to get it up.
Right, so, right. So I'll never forget this. The building was this kind of gray four-story, it looked like an old big high school. That was like the headquarters building. So I was in the office of whoever was interviewing me, and at 12 o'clock, a bell rang. And it was lunchtime. And when that bell rang, all these doors opened, and all these white men in gray suits stepped out. And it was like, wow. So you knew what they were trying to do. You know, I always say that the biggest beneficiaries of affirmative action are white women.
Right.
Seriously. I mean, you know, in the 70s in particular, there was a real drive to get more women on your staff in some way, shape, or form. That has changed because just like last night, you could see the number now of executives. The president of ABC is a black woman. Kim Godwin, first black woman to lead a network news operation. And but there are a lot more women now in management positions in the industry. But it still needs it has a ways to go to diversify.
Well, jumping back again though to my question, did you feel at times you were up against it as a woman?
Oh yeah,
because you're a fighter.
Yes, correct. And I would I had incidents where I got, you know, the VFW at that time wouldn't allow women. I was covering a story about this drive to allow women. I got hauled out of the meeting. I mean, there was I did. I felt like you had really no one that looked like you in the building, you know, or in the operation, and that was in your position. So that was hard. It's hard, and you don't even think about that today.
Right.
You don't even think about that today.
Well, maybe what he's asking is, back then, did you realize it would change? Because maybe then it didn't even feel. It felt like I'm the only one. I'm the only one there's ever going to be.
Right.
And what's it going to look like? But I think
in sports media over
the last 30 years. It's
we're
going from Sam White, letting women in the locker room. Now they don't let men in the locker room.
It's really changed.
Yeah,
that's exactly right. Including, you know, in sports itself with coaching and refereeing and officiating and everything else. I think that after the first couple of years, I realized that there was a real movement underway to get women into better positions in the industry. So the next job I got was with the Pennsylvania Public Television Network, and we were based in Harrisburg, but it was actually WQED I worked for in Pittsburgh. And that involved four of us on that staff, and it was three women and a man. We were on the on-air staff.
And that's a long time ago, right?
That was 1978.
So, okay. So there you go. So there's some groundbreaking stuff.
Didn't take long.
Right, correct.
We were with the award-winning.
So it did. It happened quickly where you could see change coming. Right.
You want to take a break? Do a quick one?
Quick break. Jane Miller, WBAL, the award-winning Jane Miller, and we'll be back soon.
Well, we're in El Guapo. I want to also say we got some delicious nachos here. I got guacamole. I was a little late getting set up. I didn't get any stuck in my teeth, but I'm going to at the end of the segment. Betty Boop, we're going to give away some scratch-off tickets as well, presented by the Maryland Lottery, letting ourselves play. Also, Goodwill Industries, beginning this week, sponsoring the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We're at Costas next week and at Fadley's in Lexington Market on the 23rd. Back for more with Jane Miller at El Guapo in Catonsville right after this.